President Donald Trump has always been a mold breaker from the beginning. He's always been not the common person that you see. He's doing things different than everybody else. He literally breaks the molds of how people operate, and he's been the disruptor. All those things have always been talked about as what makes Donald Trump who he is and why so many people have loved him. But what happens if that shtick, if that propensity is actually starting to deteriorate and we didn't even notice because we thought it was what he was doing on purpose? That is what we want to talk about today, because the ramifications for what could be in the process of unraveling at the moment could have significant implications for the national security of the United States. And things are a lot worse, I believe, than many people realize. And to try to help unpack a lot of this, we have absolutely delighted today to have on the show Dr. John Gartner, psychologist and former professor at Johns Hopkins University Medical School, who's been really outspoken on this. You've been kind of the pioneer on this issue here, even from Trump's first term. We're delighted to have you on the show today. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, it's a dubious distinction to be the pioneer, because I think that means you're the first one to hang.
Well, let's hope that we can avoid that last part, but you're definitely the first one that can alert the country of some issues here. And even before we get into what may be going on with some of this cognitive decline, I want to ask you to kind of go down on some of the detail of something I've seen you on a couple of other shows talk about, that there are really two issues at stake involved here, and they're not necessarily mutually exclusive. And one is what you call the malignant narcissist, and then the other one is dementia. What are the differences between those?
Well, so malignant narcissism is a personality disorder. So Donald Trump has always been a malignant narcissist. And one of the things that people need to understand about that diagnosis, it's actually not in the DSM-3. It's actually a historic diagnosis, and I'm only really familiar with it because my mentor, Otto Kernberg, is one of the world's experts on it. It was introduced by Eric Fromm after World War II to explain the psychology of Hitler and other grandiose murderous dictators like him. In other words, Fromm was trying to describe a type of leader. And Fromm gave us all of these warnings about how destructive these leaders could be and how their grandiosity and their murderous paranoia and their sadism would be inflamed when they gained power. And those are the four components: are narcissism, antisocial personality disorder, so that's frequent lying, breaking laws and norms. You talked about breaking molds. Yeah. Well, if you break laws and norms, that's a mold of sorts. Exploiting other people and feeling no sense of, and violating their rights and feeling no sense of shame or guilt or fear about it. And then paranoia. And then finally, sadism, that he really takes great pleasure in harming people and punishing his enemies and belittling people, and also in creating chaos and terror, which I think is part of what he's trying to do. So that's the baseline, which is really bad. But we're really in a perfect storm, because in addition to that, he has been evidencing signs of dementia now for many years. I've been writing about this. I wrote about this with a series of physicians and a group of op-eds in 2019. He's gotten way worse since then. And the problem is, when people, well, of course, obviously, it's an immense danger to have a head of state who has dementia. But when someone has a personality disorder, it interacts with their dementia. So they become the worst version of themselves. All of their personality traits and disorders and problems become magnified and more erratic and less inhibited and more confusing and more disinhibited. So for example, we've noticed he's becoming more coarse in the way he's interacting with the press, saying, "Quiet, piggy." That to me looks like an example of disinhibition. And it's probably something in terms of, if we don't know for sure, but it's probably something in the area of frontotemporal dementia specifically, where we do see a lot of behavioral disinhibition. So what we have right now is sort of, in a way, really the perfect storm. The worst case scenario, we have a very sort of evil and an evil leader who is also losing his cognitive skills, who has no guardrails around him, right? They're firing all the people in the military, for example, who, all the lawyers who can tell them what an illegal order is, they just fired those people. And he has this enormous power. So those four things together, we really can't, I think, overestimate the risk to national security. And that's not even talking about the corruption and the Russia ties, just in terms of having a head of state with that much power and that little restraint, who is essentially a malevolent actor and is really losing a grip on what's going on.
So now what do you say to his supporters who say, well, you say he's a malignant narcissist and he doesn't care about people, et cetera, but he cares about us. And you know, he's the one guy that actually cares about the little guy here. And we don't agree with that. What do you say to that?
Well, I guess you wouldn't want to have that conversation with a farmer or anyone who relies on immigrant labor. You wouldn't want to have that conversation with anyone who relies on food stamps. You wouldn't want to have that conversation with anyone who relies on Medicaid. You might not even have that conversation with anyone who relies on airplanes because, you know, they were practically shut down during the shutdown. Look, he's at this point, the vast majority of the country understands that he is harming the economy. His polling is massively underwater. He's lost 30 points in terms of the handling of the economy. He is an oligarch who's out for himself and his rich buddies, and he's simply bamboozled and fooled those ordinary people.
Now let me ask you this question. Now, if I ask something outside of your area of expertise, just let me know. But one of the things that's really been puzzling to me is that he really gained power by mobilizing a lot of people on the lower end of the socioeconomic spectrum.
Sure.
He's a rich guy, but he's for the little guy when all the other rich guys were just for the other rich guys, like in the 2016 presidential election, especially within the Democratic or Republican Party. But then in this particular, since he's been inaugurated here, there's been this cognitive dissonance, I guess, that I have a hard time understanding. On the one hand, the lower economic people still sing his praises and still love him while he's building a $350 million ballroom, while he's going on these big parties, while other people aren't even eating, et cetera. These things with all these high powered people that are out there in the open, it's not hidden, and yet he doesn't lose the support out here. How does that work?
Well, actually, you mentioned the right word, cognitive dissonance. The theory of cognitive dissonance is that once you have a certain belief, you will kind of shape the data that you take in to fit that belief. It's getting harder and harder to do that, and he is losing support. I mean, he's losing support dramatically, but of course there is a core group of true believers or cult followers, depending how you would want to say it, who really are. He could have sex with a child on Fifth Avenue and get away. Forget the Epstein files. There are people who will never, part from him. He's really bamboozled them, as all demagogues do. In other words, what he's really done is he's not for the little guy, but he's given that an impression by hating the people they hate, by saying, I'm going to be your revenge. You know, we're going to get those eggheads and those liberals and those, you know, whatever, trans loving, anti-Christian, you know, people who, you know, look down on you with their fancy degrees and are making tons of money working at their computers, you know, so it's not that. You know, in the past, American presidents have charismatically drawn people who saying, look, I'm for you and I'm for the country. He said he ran on revenge. I mean, he told us who he was. You know, I am your vengeance. So if he's our avenger, well, I guess you don't expect the toxic avenger to be a nice guy. And that doesn't mean he's really for you. It's just the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
And what do you make of the, and maybe it's again another version of the cognitive dissonance, especially of the evangelical community in the United States, where they want to say that he's God's messenger on earth, he's praying and they had the Bible and all this stuff. And yet these actions he takes are just radically out of character with what any follower of Jesus Christ actually is supposed to be according to the Bible. And yet some of these people still support him. How does that work?
You know, I don't know if he's the Antichrist, because I don't know if such a thing exists. If it does, he's my candidate. But in any case, he's certainly the most anti-Christian human being that I've ever encountered. If you want to look at the fruits of the Spirit, as the Bible, defines them, in every regard, he is the opposite. So I have to say, and I'm sure you're going to get some angry comments on this, I'm extremely disappointed with the evangelical church. I used to have an enormous amount of respect for them. I no longer do. It's that black and white for me. I think they've gone to the dark side. But I will say I've got renewed enthusiasm for the Catholic Church, because this Pope and these bishops have taken a stand against the persecution of immigrants. I think the persecution of immigrants is a perfect example of anti-Christian behavior. And, you know, these are our neighbors, not only in some, biblical sense, but they're literally our neighbors. Like, they live next door. They live in our community. Right. And so I think the Catholic Church has taken a stand, which they don't always do, against the persecution of these people. And I just want to give a real, I feel like the Catholic Church is a real Christian witness right now. And I'm really so glad, because the evangelical church, frankly, is a satanic witness in my view right now.
And there is one of the, you know, Trump will do something like what he did, I guess, is a week or 10 days ago, where he says, I'm going to consider using military power against Nigeria because they are killing all the Christians, which of course made all that community very happy. But when you see the, again, the dissonance between all of the actions and the behaviors and the morality, they don't seem to line up with that, but it makes them happy to hear that we might go and kill a bunch of people who are after the Christians in Africa.
Well, again, it's about vengeance, right? It's, you know, didn't God say vengeance is mine?
He did. I can confirm that that is accurate. But yeah, so that's, yeah, that's part of the issues here. That a lot of that, I guess, correct me if I'm wrong, is part of the cognitive, I'm not sorry, cognitive dissonance,
yeah,
part of the malignant narcissist, right? I mean, that's kind of where those behaviors come from. Is that correct?
Yes. Okay. Yes, absolutely. And then, you know, you talk about him blowing people up, right? I mean, the fact that he's blowing up these votes, you know, these boats from Venezuela, we have no idea whether they're even drug runners or not. And even if they were, that's illegal. This is the kind of thing that leaders like this like to do. You know, remember that scene when Robert Duvall, you know, in the Vietnam movie, he says, "I love the smell of napalm in the morning." You know, that's the kind of almost cultish, you know, thrill he gets from harming people, destroying people, dominating people. And so, yeah, we can beat up on Venezuela and boats, right? We're powerful enough. Who's going to stop us? He gets off on it, is what I'm saying. So it's not just illegal. It's a perverse pleasure for him.
Yeah, we definitely see that on display on a routine basis. We're on this channel, we are talking about those extrajudicial killings in the Caribbean Sea quite often. One of the things I've also seen from you talking in other places is that in order to really assess what somebody's cognitive decline may be, is to get a baseline from their own words or their own behavior. So we have a compilation here of some of the really pretty strong and coherent and cogent speeches given by Trump from 2014 to 2017. Watch this.
I think in 2016, you'll probably be running against Hillary. I think it's going to be a tough race, but I think it's going to be a race that by that time will be so bad that the Republicans will likewise take that. And then you can actually end Obamacare, which is a total catastrophe. A total catastrophe. We need a leader that wrote the art of the deal. We need a leader that can bring back our jobs, can bring back our manufacturing, can bring back our military, can take care of our vets. Our vets have been abandoned. And a financial system stacked against the American people. These entrenched interests will do anything they can to keep the broken system in place, but they will fail, and we will win because we are fighting on this side of our great American heritage.
So I think even aside from you see how powerful and cogent he was and how in control of all of his words, he also said the same thing, or I guess you kind of just referred to there, about he's fighting for you and he's going to get vengeance against the people you don't like there.
I'm glad you showed those clips because those aren't that long ago, right? It was just, you know, from whatever, 8 years ago. People who worked in the first Trump administration have all said that he's not the same guy, that he has deteriorated dramatically. And you really see it actually in those clips, because in those clips, he's speaking in almost polished paragraphs, right? Now he has trouble finishing a sentence, a thought, and sometimes even a word. You know, you've seen on social media kind of these people making fun of him and having supercuts of all the words he mispronounces. But actually, his mispronunciations are not just funny. They're actually medical signs of dementia. It's a very specific kind of mispronunciation we call phonemic paraphasia, where he's using words that are not words, but have a kernel of a word in them. So I'm saying missus instead of missiles, you know, for example, or Christmas instead of Christmas. And there was actually even an example this week where, or this these last few weeks, where he actually had a phonemic paraphasia in writing, where he tweeted out South Cara, duh, 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 duh. And people said, oh, I guess he's trying to say South Carolina. Okay, but if you're trying to say South Carolina and you say South Carolina did, that's a phonemic paraphasia. Okay,
and you so you can have a phonemic paraphasia. Both.
You do it if you're demented.
You can have a if I can't say that word myself,
phonemic paraphernalia
in writing or in verbal. I mean, how would you?
It's more unusual in writing. It's more unusual in writing. It usually is verbal, but here we have it in black and white. So that's a kind of unusual, but. There it is. But you should know that his deterioration is in many areas. And we need to diagnose dementia. You need to see not only deterioration in language, which we see in his case, that's the most visible, but also deterioration in memory, in psychomotor performance, in behavior. For example, when he was negotiating with Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries about the shutdown, he said to Chuck Schumer, yeah, and Chuck Schumer came and talked to me, and he brought a very nice man with him. Well, you know, that's sort of like what happens if you bring your sister to see your demented mother in the nursing home, and she says, oh, who's that nice woman? Well, that's your daughter, Mom. You know, he didn't recognize who Hakeem Jeffries was, and it's not the first time this has happened. Michael Wolff, in his book about Trump, said this happened often, that he would meet people who he's known for years and not recognize them. Okay, he obviously knows who Hakeem Jeffries is because he put that funny little sombrero and the, you know, the mustache on him, right? And he thought that was very hilarious. He knows who Hakeem Jeffries is. He's the minority leader of the House. He deals with him all the time, and yet he drew a total blank, called him that nice man. Okay, that's the kind of hard indication I'm saying we're seeing in all areas. We're seeing in the psychomotor performance. If you saw him and also the confusion and the disorientation. For example, when he was in Japan, if any of you saw that, he was wandering. He's with the Prime Minister of Japan and looks blank and confused. And three times she has to physically direct him, physically move him into the right place. And then she loses him altogether. He really wanders off away from the group, about 20 soldiers down, and they're all behind him. Finally, a soldier comes and directs him back to the group. The other thing we see is his gait is affected in a very specific way that we see in people who have dementia. He has something we call a wide-based gait, where one of his legs is sort of dead and he kind of swings it around in a semicircle. His right leg, he does that with. And you know, sometimes it's very obvious. Sometimes you don't notice it much. But if you know, remember when he met Putin on the red carpet, he was zigzagging across the red carpet and people sped it up and he looked kind of like Benny Hill. And it was sort of, again, way of poking fun of him. But if you slow it down, you actually see him swinging that leg. And that,
and what does it tell you?
Well, it's a symptom of frontotemporal dementia. Specifically, I had an expert who, that's all she does is frontotemporal dementia. Well, that's a smoking gun for her. And she said that in an article in Slate. Sorry, not Slate, the other one. Salon a while ago. Zoffman, Dr. Zoffman was her name. And, you know, the other thing is, I think that his doctors know he has dementia. We can actually infer that from what we know they're telling us and not telling us about his medical tests. Well, first of all, we know his doctors have been big liars, you know, going back to the beginning of his doctor in New York, you know, and then Ronnie Jackson said he could live to be 1,000 because he had such great genes and, you know, lied about his heart disease and his weight and everything else. But so they gave this report and said, well, we gave him advanced imaging for his second annual physical, like as if it was just a normal thing. Well, Trump actually spilled a few things. First of all, he's bragging about these dementia screening tests that he passed as if it were an IQ test. He's been doing that for years, right? The MoCA. But then he said, well, they gave me cognitive tests, plural. Okay. And he said, you know, you had to put a star in a circle and AOC couldn't do that. You know, so in other words, they're giving him a battery of tests, not just a screening test. You know, if someone fails the screening test, then you might give them a whole neuropsychological workup, or if you see any of these troubling clinical signs that you and I have been talking about. And we know they gave him an MRI. Now, they won't tell us why, they won't tell us which organ, and they won't tell us the results. But I can tell you something that we know from the way mass medicine is practiced in this country. You don't give someone an MRI unless you are suspecting or trying to rule out a serious problem. You don't just give people MRIs. So given that they're giving him cognitive tests, I'm sure they did just do an MRI of his heart and skip the brain. I'm sure they did an MRI of his brain. And they're just not telling us why, and they're not telling us the results. But in other words, I love the fact that people criticize me from, you know, diagnosing from a distance because I haven't examined him, but the doctors who've examined him are lying to us.
Yeah. And what do you make of his claim a week or so ago when he was asked about the MRI and what it was? And he said, I don't know. Is that just him lying or is that him not knowing?
Well, you know, with him, I have to admit, sometimes it is confusing. When is he lying and when is he just confused? When is he making up a lie and when is he confabulating? That's another technical term. When people have dementia, they start filling in the gaps, right? Our mind abhors a vacuum. So if we don't remember, we kind of make it up. We don't think we're making it up. We're just sort of misremembering it. So, for example, when he was talking about, the Unabomber was in my uncle's class at MIT, and I asked him, what was he like? And he said, he was always getting in trouble because he thought he knew better than everyone else. And none of this ever happened. He didn't go to MIT. He could never discuss the Unabomber with his uncle because by the time we discovered who the Unabomber was, his uncle had died. I don't think he's lying. I mean, when he says that, the prices of butter are down, well, he's just lying. You know, we know the prices of everything are up, and he's going to say up is down and down is up because that's what he does. But he didn't get some political benefit from telling this story. I honestly think when he told that story, he thought it happened. That, again, anyone who's ever had a demented relative will know that sometimes your relative will just start telling stories, memories of things that didn't happen, and it's no point in contradicting them, right? Because they're just going to get defensive. You just kind of go with it. But that's an example as well. The other thing is he's falling asleep all the time, which is also something that people who have dementia do. I was talking about this during his criminal trial. I've spoken to a number of lawyers. I said, in your whole career, have you ever known of a defendant to fall asleep in the middle of their own clinical trial? Ever? You, a colleague, any lawyer, the newspaper, any trial you're aware of? Not one has ever been aware of it ever happening. I mean, I guess unless you were like so high on drugs, maybe, but then they try to exclude you from the trial then. But
I wonder if you, because obviously that was something that also happened a lot to the predecessor with Joe Biden, where he would fall asleep a lot. And he had obviously a lot of very famous gaffes and things that happened, during that June debate in 2024 was the end of his political career. How would you compare or contrast the type of dementia that apparently Joe Biden had and how you see Trump? Are they the same or different?
Well, I think, one of the things about diagnosing from a distance is you don't know what you don't know, right? You know what the behaviors are observing, but you don't know what behaviors are being hidden from you. I think in the case of Biden, their real sin was they hid from the American people what was going on with him. So we really don't know. We just know that there's something very wrong, right? And we all realized at that catastrophic moment at the debate, when Biden was looking like a deer in the headlights, uncomprehendingly at the camera, I think that was the moment that we all felt like, oh shit, this is it. We're falling through the trap door. I think that really was the moment that we lost. What's terrible is that his advisors encouraged him to run again. It's one thing for them to have hidden him. Okay. All right. For his dignity, for the party. But if you know that he's that far gone, don't encourage him to run again. So those people did the country a terrible disservice, his immediate advisors. So I can't really compare it because I don't have enough data to be confident about it could be Parkinson's, it could be a lot of things. But in the case of Trump, it's on display. these examples I'm giving you, we could go on for the whole show. I'm just trying giving you the dementia du jour, but these, we can go back to a lot of examples that we're showing this deterioration on all of these levels. And then again, his behavior was deteriorating. He was always erratic and outside the box, as you say, but he's becoming more confused and erratic and impulsive. So if he's meeting with the head of Canada, right, to work out a trade deal, and then the premier of Ontario puts out a tweet where he has a little video of Ronald Reagan saying he's against tariffs, impulsively, that's it. I'm not going to negotiate with Canada anymore. Well, it wasn't the Canadian prime minister who posted it. It's, you know, someone from Canada posted a video you didn't like, and you're just going to post, that's it, I'm not going to. But it's things like that. Or even this quiet piggy, you know, he's always been coarse, but he's getting coarser. Baseline is pretty low there, he's going lower.
Well, and then, no, I want to get back to that. You talked about the baseline that we just showed you from 2015 or 2014 and 2017. Now I want to show a couple of here from just the last 2 months, last month and this month. First of all, I want to see, show, and I know you've had some points to make on this, from the speech at McDonald's.
I said, do you guys like doing this stuff? You know, they said, sir, it was the greatest day of our life. Can you believe this, Congressman? It was the great, I mean, they're like heroes. They're like American heroes. Who the hell wants to sit? You know, those ships are very big, but they're very small when you're up way high, going very fast. And he said, it was the greatest day of our life. And they told me something that I didn't know. They said that, sir, do you know, we waited 22 years for this, our predecessors and us. We would practice this run for 22 years. I didn't know that. For 22 years, we had a practice. We'd do it three times a year. We would practice this exact run. And then when you cancel it, because I canceled when they heard that we were coming, we were devastated. I said, now if I were a flyer and they canceled, I'd be extremely happy. Well, we're canceled, so let's forget it. But we were devastated. So I said, this is something you really love, right? Yes, sir. We were so honored. This was the greatest day of our life. I mean, it's really great. We just have incredible people in this country. It's an amazing story. And they hit, and then they said, skedaddle, the word skedaddle. And that plane went like this. You know, when it drops a bomb, it goes down very steeply because that gives it a better angle and, you know, more speed for the bomb. Very, very heavy bombs. And they go, boom. And as soon as those things, the one pilot, the first one said, skedaddle. And that thing just turned in its side. And it, I mean, it's just so unbelievable.
Any idea what he's talking about?
Yeah, skedaddle. I mean, I remember that from skedaddle. My childhood, Yeah. What do you see from this?
Well, it's disorganized thought. You know, the thoughts, first of all, we don't know what he's talking about. We never really understand the context of what this incident is that he's trying to relay. The sentences don't even relate to each other. You have all these sentences where he just stops in the middle and then just starts another one and stops in the middle and starts another one where they don't even relate to each other. And then he just, it's skedaddle. As if that's the punchline. That's the whole, you know, it's skedaddle, the word skedaddle. As if that's somehow the anecdote or the explanation or the punchline. It doesn't really make sense. It doesn't hold together. And, you know, that's where it's useful, actually, to do what you just did, which is to play an extended clip. I think the press has really been doing us a disservice. They've kind of been hiding this in plain sight. I kind of like where they hid FDR was in a wheelchair for 4 years and we never knew because they were kind enough to only show him from above. It's like they're kind of showing us these clips, right, where he's saying something provocative or threatening, but they're not showing us the whole meandering, tangential thought process. And that's another sign of cognitive decline. When people become tangential, when they go off on tangents that don't relate to what they're talking about, or they go from topic to topic through a sort of chain of loose associations that don't actually make sense. The example I often give is, you know, when he was lying and saying that they're sending immigrants from insane asylums, the next thing he says is, anyone here seen Silence of the Lambs? Okay, so we're talking about immigrants coming from insane asylums. That reminds him of a movie about an insane asylum. Okay, that's a loose association. And then he goes, oh, the late, great Hannibal Lecter. No one likes to talk about him anymore. Okay, well, first of all, Hannibal Lecter is a fictional character, so he can't be dead. He can't be the late Hannibal Lecter. And then I always think it's funny that he thinks, you know, people should be admiring him more, like he's some, you know, admirable historical figure. Well, he's a serial killer who eats people. But I guess in Trump's psychology, that's the kind of ego ideal he might admire, that he thinks people aren't praising enough. But in other words, it's that same kind of loose associations where there is no connection. He just keeps veering off on side tangents.
And actually, I've got one more here from October in Japan, where President Trump was talking, and you'll see a lot on display here of both sentences just stopping in mid-sentence and going somewhere else, things that are not connected at all. And well, here it is.
We do make the best weapons, but if you don't have the right people to operate those weapons, they don't mean much. Despite that, as Commander-in-Chief, I never forget that our ultimate strength does not come from equipment. It comes from the men and women of the rank and file. That's true. It comes from you people, incredible people, good-looking people, too many good-looking people. I don't like good-looking people. I never liked good-looking people, I'll be honest with you. I've never admitted that before. But see, I'm allowed to. You know, we won in the Supreme Court a thing based on merit. You know about that, right? Merit. Everything now in our country is based on merit. And that's why I look at you and I see nothing but merit.
We actually used at the time he made that statement, some of his comments about the military and being so strong and all that. Like you said, we just pick out some bites here. But then this one here, kind of in the middle, you're talking about the manpower and how we rely on those. That's cool. That's great. But then All of a sudden it's about attractive people. And then there's the Supreme Court. I have no earthly idea what that's talking about. And then it just went on from there. What does that tell you?
Well, it tells us a lot than what you just said. So yeah, he's on script and he's talking about how great the people in the military are. Then he goes on a tangent about how he hates good looking people. Okay. Now that's just a crazy tangent. But then the next thing he says doesn't relate even to that tangential thought. You know, well, you know, I never admitted that before, but, you know, I'm allowed to say that because I won in the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Wait, what? So, OK, that does not compute. And then he goes, yeah, because we won on merit. Now the country is based on merit. So that doesn't relate to the Supreme Court. And nor does the first thing about. Wait, because he won in the Supreme Court, he's allowed to say he doesn't like attractive people. I think he had that in the First Amendment, you know, to begin with. I don't think he had to go to the Supreme Court for that. Is he talking about his immunity? You just don't know. But it's clear that these thoughts are disordered, discombobulated, don't relate to each other. And, it's like the emperor has no brain. It's all on display, and yet no one is calling it out.
And so I want to then go. So it's one thing if it's a speech. It's one thing if you can say, oh, well, this is dumb. It's crazy, whatever. But I'm now wanting to see that mentality, how that applies to actual policies. And let's start off with the tariffs, because earlier this year there was going to be Liberation Day and Trump was going to enrich Americans and all this. And so on April 2nd, he had this big tariff thing where he talked about how he was going to reshoring manufacturing jobs. The point was not to negotiate anything else. It was because we're going to enrich Americans by getting all this money, and then everything was going to be great for us, and everybody was going to give us money. Well, that was in April. Then we had, and let me pull this up here because I wanted to point out what it was. You had Scott Bessent, who came on May 18th, then completely did a complete reverse and said, President Trump has put them on notice that if you do not negotiate in good faith, you will ratchet back up to your April 2nd level. So the exact opposite. And now since that time, no one's even talking about any kind of non-negotiation or bringing back onshoring jobs. It completely changed. And then he went, of course, now then we have this issue of 145% tariffs on China. And then it was 100%. Then it was down to 30. And then it was down to 32%. And then now then it's back to 47%. Now, how does anybody, and we'll just take China, how does anybody make any negotiation with the United States when it's wildly gyrating from one time to another? And then the big question is for you, is this just Trump trying to be disruptive, or is this evidence of someone who's having a hard time getting their cognition?
Yeah, no, the latter. And you put it very well, you know, and a lot. And as he's deteriorating, he's becoming more chaotic and erratic. So, you know, it's like the Queen of Hearts. It's like, today I got pissed off by something I saw on social media. I'm putting 100% tariffs on China. You know, I mean, he's been impulsively changing these tariffs on a day-to-day basis. So you're right. How do you even negotiate with someone who's so erratic? You know, it's not even clear what the terms are, right? It's changing every day because he can't keep it straight. And of course, that's weakening us immensely.
So that's on the economic front, which has an impact on every American, because a lot of these things are really hurting Americans, they're hurting some of our allies, et cetera. Sure. Now then you have war and peace issues. So President Trump entered office, which he campaigned on in 2024, by saying, I'm going to end this war in a day. And then, okay, no one thought it was actually day, but that you would get onto it, you know, from day one, et cetera. Yeah. Within that one day turned into 100 days, 100 days turned into 50 days, and then to 10 days, then to no days, and then to, okay, I want an unconditional ceasefire or else. And then there was no ceasefire. There was no or else. And then he said, okay, you know what? A bunch of sanctions. I'm going to throw sanctions on Russia, and these big ones, and forget about it. And then it was just a number of days later, he said, well, you know, sometimes you just got to fight it out, and the two sides just have to fight it out. And then now then today, there's this evidence that he's out there trying to pitch this 28-point peace plan. So after just days after saying, let them fight it out, now he's saying there's a peace plan. What the hell?
Yeah, it's chaos. It's chaos. You know, this reminds me of that expression, an expression from the Middle Ages, where they said, you know, a bad king is better than no king, and no king is better than a child king. You know, and the point being is that chaos, if you have someone who's chaotic and doesn't have a handle on what's going on, that's the worst. And so what you have here is, yeah, not only can you not negotiate with him because he's corrupt, but he doesn't even remember what he's doing from day to day. And he's erratic and he's changing and he's flip-flopping. And so chaos is not our friend here. We know that there are cognitive slippage having to do with foreign policy. You know, he was talking about how he negotiated peace between India and Iran, or Pakistan and Iran. Well, see, Iran starts with I, like India. Okay. So, and he's made that mistake before, mixing up countries that start with the same letter. But yeah, it's not
Armenia and,
Arbajan.
He's got those mixed up.
Arbajan. And it's not just confusing the names, because then another point, he was talking about India and Pakistan. He said, well, you know, India's had a lot of changes of leadership. No, that was Pakistan. You're switching them, right? So he's not just switching the names. He's switching the details about the countries. He can't keep them straight. There's like a dozen examples of him mislabeling countries.
And obviously that's a huge issue when you're talking about, you could literally be making life and death decisions for anybody. We talked about these issues with the boats out in the Caribbean, but now then we have a large flotilla off the shore of Venezuela, and there has already given some orders that there could be some military actions down here. Who knows whether it's going to be, but right now, there was some evidence there was going to be something last weekend. There wasn't, but we don't know anything about what's going to happen. And the question is, does he?
Well, he's like the Queen of Hearts, you know, off with their head, an impulse. So we don't know what impulses are going to, take hold of him. What he's going to be reacting to, and why he might want to lash out. Maybe because he's mad about something else. Maybe because he misunderstood what's happening. Maybe because he thought it was a different country that started with the same letter. it's terrifying.
And so where could this go? One of the things you've said a lot, which always got my attention, was the version of Donald Trump that you see today is the best one that there will ever be, because it's going to be deteriorating. What can you expect based on your clinical experience? What can we expect in, like, say, the next 6 to 12 months?
Right. You can take to the bank that he is going to continue to deteriorate, because the thing about dementia is it never gets better and it never stays the same. It always gets worse. And at some point, the deterioration accelerates. And I think we're in that phase now. The fact that we're noticing differences almost week by week suggests that he's getting very close to that point where some people fall off what we call a cognitive cliff. And then suddenly there's that kind of, oh, shit moment when people realize, oh, we got to take the keys away. Like, he can't live independently. This is now a patient. I think he's actually past that point, but people are covering for him, right? And making excuses for him, including the press. But it's only going to continue to get worse. So the sort of absurdity, right, of this play that we're doing, where it's like My Weekend at Bernie's. Remember that movie where the guy was dead and they're wheeling him around, pretending he's alive at this party? Well, this is sort of like My Weekend at Bernie's White House, you know, that all the people around him are enabling him. And because they are all enablers and opportunists and essentially operatives, they're not going to invoke the 25th Amendment, no matter how bad he gets. So we are in a really, really bad situation. And it is going to get much, much worse.
And I mean, you say it's not going to, but I mean, the issue you talked about where Biden, with he had his big oh crap moment in June, you know, of the election year. Well, there was just months left, so it wasn't hard to figure that out. But we're not even to the 1 year mark of this one. So the question could certainly come in at some point. What do you think it would take before all these handpicked loyalists on the cabinet who would be required to invoke the 25th Amendment? How bad might it get before they actually give some serious thought to that?
I've come to believe there is no bottom. That, you know, that if he were literally babbling, they would say, oh, you know, that's the wisest thing a president has ever said. You know, I think that they simply, the way they overpraise him, you know, in these cabinet meetings, you know, that he's the greatest president ever, you've saved the country, when none of those things are true. So I think they will. I don't know if there really will be a turning point, but I've come to become so cynical because I used to say, well, look, if he's babbling incoherently, then people will know. Now he's babbling incoherently and we're still going on with the farce. So I don't know where the bottom is. I don't know how bad it would have to get for the people who have the responsibility for the country to do anything about it. But I, at this point, have given up hope that there ever will be a bottom that will bring them to do the right thing.
Well, then, just let me ask you from a medical position, given where he is right now and what you've seen in the past, when someone deteriorates, how fast might one deteriorate to the point where they literally can't even function anymore? Because presumably at some point they would get to that level.
I don't think he's going to be able to make it to the end of his term and still be compos mentis. At the rate that he's deteriorating, I just don't think he can make it. It'll be really a bit of a farce, and a frightening farce, though, kind of like a black comedy, as he gets more and more demented, and yet he's in taking more and more dictatorial power.
Yeah, well, I guess we're just going to have to hope that enough information like this gets out, that enough people start looking, that maybe his supporters start recognizing that, okay, we're going to have to take some action, because it's beyond farce now, if there is such a place. But we'll have to hope at that. But in any case, we really appreciate you coming on today and giving us this truth. Whether we like it or not, it is the truth, and it's something we need. So thank you very much.
Well, thanks for having me.
Always our pleasure. And thanks very much for you guys for joining us today. We really appreciate you. We will look forward to seeing you tomorrow on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.